Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Man on the Mic podcast, hosted by Jeffrey Mann. This podcast is dedicated to honest discussions that inspire, connect, and bring out the best in our guests. Now let's get started with the show. Here's your host, Jeffrey Mann.
Awesome. Hey, welcome everybody back to Man on the Mic. Today I'm joined by a special guest, Matt Hoodie. We are going to be talking about fitness, nutrition, but also mindset behind that. And so I want to give him a chance just to introduce yourself to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Matt Hoodie. I am a dietitian by trade. I also own a gym out here in Scottsdale, Arizona called Transform Scottsdale. I've had it for 9 years now, a cryotherapy clinic. And then my main job is online nutritional coaching for people with special circumstances, people who need a little bit more guidance.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that. So let's dive in, kind of let's start at the beginning. What got you into this space?
So I was, like we were talking about, I was over 300 pounds at my heaviest. I was diagnosed as pre-diabetic when I was 19, okay. But I've been overweight my whole life. As a kid, you know, I played video games. I love food. I actually started off wanting to be a chef. So okay. I started off at Scottsdale Culinary, did like half a semester there. There was the Cordon Bleu program here, and I was just getting fatter and fatter. And I got really sick, and I had been avoiding the doctor. People will do this when they're getting fat. They'll avoid the doctor because they don't want to be weighed.
Yeah.
And they don't want them to do blood work. So I was like, I haven't been a doctor in like 3 years. So I go back to the doctor, and I'm really sick, and they weigh me, and they're like, you're up 80 pounds. You know, we want to run tests and see if you have hypothyroidism or some. Is there a reason behind this, right? They run blood work. My blood work's fine. I just was playing video games and eating food. You know, I had gained weight, and they basically sat me down and they were like, hey man, you're pre-diabetic. Your A1C is, you know, in the sixes. You're only, you know, 20, you're in your early 20s here. If you don't turn this around, you're going to be full blown diabetic quick. Some people can get away with it. Other people can't. It just kind of depends. You don't know until you look. That's the problem. And that was enough to scare the hell out of me. And I'm a very all or nothing person. I was a pro gamer at the time. I was actually in something called the Cyber Athlete Professional League where you play before Twitch, before streaming. There was an actual league where you would travel around the country and you had a team and you travel with your coach and you'd line all the computers up. There was no streaming. Okay. So I did that pro. I played pro video games. So I literally quit video games. I decided to drop out of culinary school and I enrolled in dietetics at ASU to be a dietitian and learn as much as I could about food. And I very quickly realized that if you're going to do the food side of things, you need to do the training as well.
Yeah.
So then as I was kind of wrapping that up, I realized, you know what, let me add on a degree in exercise science. And as I was adding on that degree, I kind of wrapped them up all together. I realized I didn't want to be a traditional dietitian working in a hospital who, you know, people on dialysis, people who have lost toes to diabetes, you're just writing meal plans that manage their situation.
Yeah.
I wanted to change situations like I had. I lost 130 pounds. I want to turn other people around before they go too far. So, you know, my advisor like, well, it sounds more like a coach or a trainer. So I stayed in school. I met my ex-wife at ASU. And then when we graduated, we started up the gym and just started working with people. We work with everybody. We do specialize in overweight clients, but we work with all sorts of individuals, especially in my personal practice because I'm a dietitian by trade. I work with people who are perinatal, you know, wanting to make sure the fetus and the mother is good during pregnancy. I work with people with PCOS, Hashimoto's, a myriad of other immune disorders, even people helping who have kids who are on the spectrum and things like that, how diet can help affect those things. So pretty much anything that goes a little bit more in-depth than what you would get from a personal trainer or a nutritionist, which a lot of people don't know is not really a title. You and you could all be nutritionists today, and there's no board, there's no certifying. Unless you hear someone say, I'm a dietitian, it means they didn't do anything, which is really crazy to people.
Yeah.
You see holistic nutritionists now on Instagram.
Yeah.
There is no holistic nutrition. It's not a thing. I'm like, you guys are living on the edge here, just making up titles.
Well, and you can buy all sorts of certs.
You can buy the certs. You
Google,
know as well as I do. Yeah.
$25.
Yeah, $200, and they'll put your name on anything. It's like the little participation trope for the kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but that's not great when you're taking care of people's health care, right? We want people who are qualified and revered, you know, and respected.
This question I wanted to ask you is, looking at nutrition, looking at meals and everything, I'm curious, what does your day look like in terms of your eating and your nutrition throughout
yeah.
the day?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I always preface this question, I get it a lot, with whatever I say should not try to be applied for anyone else. It's really important, right? In the same way, what you eat, obviously you're a tank of a dude. Most people have tried to eat what you eat are not going to look like you, yeah. right? So I do want to preface with that. Mine's a little different. I'm an entrepreneur, so I have a couple of businesses. I go in person a few days to things, probably kind of like you. You have a few things you got to do, but mostly you're on your phone, your computer. Yeah. So you can kind of dictate your schedule. I personally will either usually not have a breakfast and I just kind of won't be hungry. I do eat a large dinner. Or I'll have a protein shake. But I don't like having food in my stomach digesting, especially when I'm up in the morning, I'm on my computer. Those are like my best hours for cranking. And everybody's different. The guy who does all my videos and everything, 2 a.m., he's going to work, right? I could never.
Yeah.
So find what works for you, but I skip my breakfast because of that. Now, if I wake up hungry one morning, I don't go, oh, I can't have breakfast. I don't follow like intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Or if my girl wants to go get brunch, I'm like, sorry, babe, got to wait until 11 to get brunch. Like yeah. That when you start doing those things, you're making it unsustainable. My first meal will usually come pre-workout, about 90 minutes. It's usually a bowl of oatmeal with some blueberries and some protein powder mixed in it.
Okay.
And then I will do a non-stim pre-workout. Don't really like the caffeine. I will usually do some sort of caffeine in the morning, and because of that, I don't like doing a stimulant-based pre-workout, just something for pumps.
What pre-workouts do you...
Right now I'm really liking one called Blood Sport from Apollo Nutrition.
Okay.
Good dose of citrulline, pure L-citrulline, so you're getting the nitric oxide. They've got a really high dose of that Vaso 6, which is kind of like a pump extender. I like more of the pump because, to be honest, for like nutrient delivery, yeah, it does help with that. But for me, it's like that feeling of the pump. It's going to make me push harder.
Yeah.
And it does help with blood flow and things like that. But the ones that have the stems with me honestly hinder my workouts. I find that I'm like trying to get my heart rate down more than I'm trying to focus on my lift.
Okay.
So I like the non-stem ones. And then sometimes I'll do a shake after that. Sometimes I won't. For anyone listening, there is no anabolic window. We know now that the level of elevated muscle protein synthesis lasts for about 6 to 8 hours rather than 30 minutes. So you can go have a turkey sandwich if you want. But what I did notice was, and I think this is worth noting, is if I have that shake post-workout, I kind of blunt my hunger. Whereas you know as well as I do, if you have nothing, about 30 minutes later, like when you cool down, you're like, I could devour three yeah. burritos. Whereas if you have something, it blunts you from going kind of like low blood sugar and then wanting everything in sight. So sometimes I'll do a post-workout shake. Sometimes I won't. And then to be honest with you, I will usually eat a very large dinner and then probably 2 to 3 snacks after my dinner.
Okay.
And I like eating a large dinner late at night. And if I don't, what I've noticed happens is I will wake up in the middle of the night and I will eat in the middle of the night. I'll just walk to the pantry, down it, walk right back to bed. You can see me on the little thing. I'm like half asleep, unwrap the protein bar, devour it, and just walk right back. And I realized that about myself. I was like, well, shit, why fight it? Let me eat when my body wants to eat.
Okay.
And in the morning, I don't really get hungry. I'm busy doing stuff. I'm not, I'm on the phone. I'm doing things. So.
Okay.
But everyone needs to find what works for them. Some of my other clients are the opposite of me. They do great with a big breakfast in the morning. And you got to figure out when you're going to lift, too. You should really plan most of it around, like, if you have a celebration that day, plan around that. But if you don't, try to plan it around when you're going to need to expend the most energy. Most of what we do in 2024 is not incredibly, energy intensive.
Yeah.
So try to put it when you're going to need it.
Yeah.
Try to time it a little bit.
No, for sure. Is there a good time each day to lift, like morning, afternoon, night?
Nope. So that's been completely, that is personal preference.
Okay.
A lot of people used to think morning was better. It's not good to lift at night. Then there was a study that's actually showed people who lift at night do better. The only thing I would say is if you work a really, job that's labor intensive, probably don't want to lift after that. You know what I mean? If you're a construction worker or something like that, you probably don't want to get off and go try and lift. I could see that having a hindrance on you.
Okay.
But that's not an effect of what time of day you lifted.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say alcohol probably matters more than anything. Try not to consume a lot of alcohol. If you're on the days you're going to drink, try to make those more your off days. Alcohol really inhibits muscular repair. So if you go and don't make like your best lifting day. A lot of guys hammer it on the weekends, then go drink a lot. They don't realize, and again, you probably know, it really puts muscle repair on pause until you deal with that booze.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing I really do try to stress to people. And I see that big time with my clients that if the ones who drink regularly on the weekends, when they're doing it more regularly, their muscle growth is significantly hindered versus when they're not drinking as much. Like summer's over and there's less booze, it's like all of a sudden their muscles start snapping back a lot quicker.
Okay. For you, I guess I would say, do you, and I've heard some trainers say no, some say yes, do you believe in such thing as a cheat meal?
No. So I don't. I'm completely against. Again, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a dietitian to recommend a cheat meal. Like you said, trainers. You're going to hear so – like I always stress to people, when you hear it from a trainer, validate it with a dietitian. Not to say there aren't trainers who are incredibly knowledgeable. Honestly, there are a lot of trainers who know way more than a lot of dietitians. But you know at least that person had to care enough to sit their ass in a room for 4 or 5 hours about nutrition. The reason I don't do a cheat meal is because kind of the connotation of the word cheat in itself implies you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
So there's some guilt associated with it by context. Like I'm cheating, I'm messing up. What I encourage people to do is my approach to nutrition is very education based. So I do have people track their food, and I know a lot of people hate that and they think it's terrible. But I liken it to if you were going to hire me as a financial advisor and I was going to try and help you save more money because you're not saving as much as what you had planned out.
Yeah.
First thing I'm going to have to do is look at your bank statement to know what to cut. Otherwise, I'm going to have no idea, right? And I'm going to have to start going. So that's what I do with tracking. That's how I use tracking. So I will encourage people to track initially so that we can start to learn, yo, what's tripping you up? Like, it might be something completely different than you realized. You might be taking the bun off your burger every time, not realizing that little cup of Chick-fil-A sauce has more calories than the bun does.
Yeah.
And you're leaving that little cup on. So we got to learn some of those things. Then once you learn those things, you don't have to cheat because you stop wasting calories on the stuff that you didn't even know was doing you in. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, I got room for the thing that I viewed as bad before because I cut out all these other things that were bad that I didn't even really know that were taking up calories.
Yeah.
And that's what I do for people. It's the same thing. I have an example I always give people. I say, if I'm looking at two people's bank statements, they each make $250K a year, and I got Massage Envy here, and I got an HBO membership, and Massage Envy here, and HBO membership. I go to one individual. I say, can we cut this Massage Envy? They go, what the hell? I didn't even know. Oh, that's right. My mom signed me up for that. I thought I canceled it. Get rid of that. I go to HBO. They go, whoa, listen, I got Billions. I got Game of Thrones. I got all my favorite shows. Mm-hmm. I can't. And I get to the next person. I go, Massage Envy. They go, whoa, listen, that's my happy place each month. I get to HBO. They go, oh, I signed up for that when I wanted a free movie one Friday. And I forgot. I've probably been getting billed for the last 8 months. But they both make $250K, and we're removing two entirely different things. And that's how I try to explain it to people. Like, somebody needs to learn you if you want this to be successful. That's why I think stuff like carnivore and paleo and keto and all this stuff where you get pushed into their diet box, and then you're stuck living, and then your kid is like, Mom, have a slice of bread. Sorry, Mommy's keto. She can't have your birthday cake. Or worse, you make your kid like a ground beef birthday cake, yeah. which is just, like, insane. But, like, that's what I really encourage people. I encourage people to look at it that way. Like, think about this logically, guys. Don't set yourself up to be in the same position next year. I really try to force sustainability. I've helped 31 people lose over 100 pounds. I've only ever had one of 31 regain it, which is, like, a really high rate, and I think it's kind of the nature that we go about the weight loss.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's huge. I think for me the big thing has been, you know, I tried the whole keto thing.
Yeah.
I did it.
I did too.
Jumped in. I loved it. My mistake was I got off keto. I went to Disneyland.
Okay.
And went ham on the sweets at Disneyland.
As you should. You're at Disneyland. You shouldn't be on keto.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the first day I tried it, I was like, I'm fine. Next day, the kids all went to like Ghirardelli's and got the sundae.
Body started. And I was what you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I was like, I'll just do it. But then I just pounded it.
Yeah.
And then I felt awful.
Yeah.
And so it's been interesting to see the different fads and different the popular
diets.
Well,
and you're
going to
go home. Holidays around the corner. You're going to go see your. I assume you got family.
Yeah.
They're going to make you some good food.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all going to be keto.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be offended. Your auntie and your grandma and that's what I thought about because I tried keto when I first went to lose weight. The other interesting thing is once you go to school, you're really angry as a fat person. Like as a former fat kid who went to school for nutrition, I got really like mad at school because I was like, they teach you. You actually don't lose body fat any faster on keto. This idea that if you cut out carbs, you can somehow lose weight any quicker than not having carbs. Like the first law of thermodynamics is energy in, energy out. And I know people hate the whole CECO, calories in, calories out equation, but energy can't suddenly float off of us or onto us out of nowhere. You can't gain weight unless it's not fairy. It's not like little fireflies that float onto you. You have to ingest it somehow as a human being, liquid or food, and you can't lose it without. So if you eat 1,000 calories and it's keto, or you eat 1,000 calories and it's not keto, it's 1,000 calories of energy. It has to stick to you. The idea that your body's in keto fat burning mode, it doesn't elevate your metabolism. It doesn't do anything. What it does do is keep you very, very dehydrated, and it's a very simple diet to follow. You avoid carbohydrates. So it has some advantages, but the dehydration that it keeps you in is kind of a false sense of success, because as soon as you leave keto, you have to gain a decent amount of weight back.
Yeah.
And a lot, you know that. Your muscles got to fill back out with glycogen. You have no glycogen in your muscles. And unlike yourself, who work out and you're very active, very muscular, a lot of other people run into very low energy, an inability to get through the gym. And if they fall off at all, then they have to, getting back on can be a challenge. It's just the sustainability of it is the major issue. And it's why do something that has a higher degree of sustainability if there's no additional benefit? Now, if you have seizures or you have some other thing going on that we're doing it for, then there's the additional benefit. But for the average person, they're not going to see an additional benefit than what they would see on a traditional diet of equated calories. It's kind of like carnivore. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, people go carnivore and they go, I'm not eating donuts or Oreos anymore, or I stopped eating pizza now. I'm carnivore. I feel so much better. I go, yeah, you stopped eating pizza and donuts and all these things.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, no, it was the seed oils. And I go, what is it about? Well, canola oil's terrible. I go, why? What about canola oil is terrible? I've never had an explanation.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone who's come on your podcast has ever explained it to you. I can't understand. It's the funniest thing. I get asked about it more than anything. You've mm-hmm. probably heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the carnivore diet. It's correlation is not causation, right? It's, of course, you feel better. You cut out all your processed food. You could have done that with any diet, right? Mm-hmm. It's why a lot of people feel better on keto, is because you can't eat. You can't snack late at night. What do we snack on late at night? Carbohydrates.
Yeah.
You go keto, you can't eat carbs, so people lose weight. It's, you know, there's a kernel of truth there, but it doesn't actually work that way. So it's just a result. And it's a result that might be great, but how long can you keep it up?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, completely. Keto's not sustainable. Biggest thing I've realized. I'm curious for you. Someone in the fitness industry, if you were to give advice to someone they want to get in shape, they want to start losing weight, but they don't know where to start, what's that first step that you would suggest they take?
So that's a good question, and that's a tough one. And it really depends on what's prompting them to get into it, right? If it's you were just diagnosed with a major health concern, then it might be to consult a doctor in that specialty, right? If somebody just found out that they're diabetic, I would talk to your physician about that. They'll refer you then to a dietitian. So a dietitian would then be the first step. If it's somebody who's not, they're just out of shape, right? I'm 30 pounds overweight. I'm tired of being, I was 10 pounds overweight before COVID. It's little by little crept up. My piece of advice, and people aren't going to like to hear this, but trust me, this is from a former fat kid who weighed over 300 pounds and has helped a lot of fat people. For 2 weeks, weigh yourself every day. Don't get upset at the daily weigh-ins. They're going to go all over the friggin' place. But commit and tell someone else. And that's the key. Tell your husband. Tell your best friend. Tell someone. And say, I'm going to weigh myself every day for 2 weeks. And I'm going to put in the food I eat into a diary, MyFitnessPal, whatever, for 2 weeks. It doesn't have to be perfect. You're not going to find the perfect entry when you go get your soup and salad. But just find a soup and salad from a restaurant.
Yeah.
Put it in for 2 weeks. You will learn so much about yourself that you didn't know. I just looked this morning before we did this to see. I have done 1,367 individual clients in the last probably about 6 years now for one-on-one coaching. I have had a total of 2 people out of those 1,367 who were overeating carbohydrates. And they were both over 500 pounds and were drinking multiple 2 liters per day. Every other person has either been actually in a good place, they were just eating too many calories, or the most common, about 8 out of 10 people, are overeating fat, and they don't know it. And that is what is responsible for obesity in America right now. In the 80s and 90s, it was sugar. Now it is fat. Fat is literally driving the obesity epidemic. We have now, as of 2023, the highest fat intake of any country in the world. We also simultaneously have the highest obesity rate. The first world country with the lowest fat intake in the world is Japan. They eat 60% carbohydrates. Their obesity is 3.6%. Ours is 42. Two. So they have literally, we have 12 times a 1,200% higher obesity rate. They're the highest carb eating country in the world. It's literally backwards. I mean, if I showed you what it looks like in the graphs, you would say, this is insane. Everybody is being lied to. As sugar goes down, obesity goes up. This is the USDA economic research data. This is black and white. And this is why it just blows my mind. We have been on a decline since 1998 in sugar consumption and an increase in fat consumption. And obesity has gone up and people still look to see if stuff has sugar. It's like a bad joke.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. And it's every meta-analysis you look at shows the same thing. It's I don't and carnivore just keeps getting more popular.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me, but you know, it's 2024. So I guess crazy is a relative term.
Yeah, no, it's one of those times. It's funny, I tell people, if you want to feel in good shape, go to a theme park. 2 weeks ago I was at Universal Studios in Orlando. And I was like, why am I working out so much?
Why am I so stressed?
Because you see these people 300 pounds on scooters, eating all sorts of things. They can't fit on rides and everything.
It's become much more accepted.
And I, for the first time, I felt embarrassed because there was a ride. I couldn't get it to fit on my shoulders. And I'm like, I got to go stand next.
So that actually happened. When I was overweight, I used to go to, in San Diego, there's a ride at Belmont Park. It's a roller coaster. And it was at my heaviest. And it was kind of the turning point. The next year is when I was in school. But they tried to, and my belly wouldn't go in. And the guy had to get me up out of it. And I had to walk past all of the people because they couldn't seal it down. And I remember thinking as we were waiting, I was nervous it wasn't going to seal. And I was like stressing. Yeah. I was like seeing where it was going to on other people. And that was like, I never went to I haven't been to an amusement park since. Like it probably traumatized me a little bit.
We might need a trip then.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to. That was the last time I tried to get on a roller coaster. Yeah. It's a walk of shame past all the people, and they know why. I mean, it's no secret. You look the way you do. It's no secret why you're getting off the roller coaster. Uh-huh. Yeah. So.
No, completely.
Yeah. So I completely get that. Well, and saying I don't even fit at Chase Field in the seats. You definitely don't. Like I have a hard time.
Oh, a year ago I got put in the middle seat flying to Las Vegas, and I was like,
yeah,
this is the most uncomfortable. And since then, I'm like, I'll never sit middle.
Yeah. Oh, you can't. You have to lean.
It's just not comfortable. I'm interested to ask you. It's got to be probably 9 weeks. I've been on the road nonstop. What is the heck for people to keep up with your nutrition when you're traveling so much in and out of hotels?
So that's a good question. And Tristan is kind of an example of that. Tristan travels a fair amount, not like what it sounds like you do, but I have clients who travel every week, every other week. Communication and education. It's what I do is almost like most of my clients are either business owners or C-level executive people. Not all, but most. It's learning and being willing to dialogue and say, Matt, I'm headed to Vegas this week to take out two big clients. We're going to be eating at this steakhouse and this steakhouse. Here's how I'd normally handle it. I'm going to be drinking. It is what it is. I can keep it to two old fashions, but how do I, you know, there's going to be steak and potatoes and blah. So it's having the conversation of, all right, man, you know what? You get a filet. Don't get the Wagyu. Get the filet. It's going to be leaner. Just tell them, you know, do it without butter. Like most of us wouldn't cook our steak with butter at home. We just grill our steak. People don't think through, like you had 400 calories of butter to the steak. You drizzle it over while it cooks, and they drizzle it when it plates again, right? You take mashed potatoes at a chain restaurant, Capital Grill, anywhere like that. Look up a serving of mashed potatoes, Capital Grill, 1,100 calories, right? Baked potato, 400 calories.
Yeah.
So we suggest, hey, man, get a baked potato. Get some bacon and some cheese and whatever. So now you just save 700 off the potatoes and 400 off the steak. You just save 1,100 calories.
Yeah.
You still get your old-fashioned. Nobody says anything to you. Now you know exactly what to do every time you go to a steakhouse, right? I explain to them, hey, those rolls you're getting, we've all seen the skillet at the bottom of those steakhouse rolls. It's butter. You don't get to track those as a King's Hawaiian roll. That needs to go in as a roll from a restaurant.
Yeah.
So it's educating the person, but then they know, like, all right, you know what? If I'm going to be ordering butter cake, I'm not getting the old-fashioned. If I'm getting the old-fashioned, I'm passing on the butter cake, and I'm making sure that my side is not mashed potatoes, it's a baked potato.
Yeah.
And we do that, and then we handle a sushi restaurant. And within the first month, as long as their communication's on point, these people are they're cruising because like – but that's the whole – it's the whole thing of the difference between going to USPS and picking out one of those preset boxes and dropping your item in there and moving, it's going to bounce around because it doesn't fit. It wasn't made for that item. One out of every 100 items, it might fit perfectly.
Yeah.
And that's the person who does the diet who you see on Instagram who it works perfectly for. The rest of us are better off taking the size of the item and wrapping some bubble wrap around it and making it fit the item. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, so that's how I approach it. It's the education. I tell people up front, be willing to do that education. Because then it's like it's so funny the time we spend things teaching people, right? Like everyone, most people know all the state capitals and everything, but like they don't know how to do basic things. And or they know if I hold up a bag of Cheetos and apple, they know which one's healthier, but they couldn't tell me how many calories are in either one. And we just continue to rehash the same thing. So I educate the stuff that actually matters to that person, not the health talk about how you need to shop around the outside of the grocery store and the right. Like they've heard that, and people always you go to my page, you won't see anything like that. You won't see my grocery list. They don't have lean turkey, lean ground beef. They have what's the better or the best frozen pizza if I need to pick it up. Because if you're already getting lean turkey and lean ground beef, you don't need my grocery list. Yeah. You're doing it. You got it.
Yeah.
It's let's help you where you need help. That's probably the main okay. difference. So
One of the confessions I have is I live on my phone.
Yeah.
I work from it. I do everything. My screen time is probably, well, it's not probably. It's about 13 hours a day.
Okay.
Average.
Okay.
And for you, coaching people, working with people, being hands-on with them, how do you find time for you away from the coaching, away from doing all of that?
So I spend a lot of time with my fiance. We do a lot of stuff together. We have similar interests. We work out together. I'm fortunate that, you know, exercise for me, it didn't used to be, but it's become something that I enjoy doing. It used to be a lot more regimented and a lot more, and I found joy in like just being active and moving. We will go out. I make sure, you know, we keep enough time for us. We've got kids. We go do stuff like Putt Shack. We go out to eat. We go do, you know, vacations, pretty much the normal. I like playing basketball. That's okay. Like a nice release for me.
Yeah. Same thing.
So I'll play at Lifetime after I finish lifting sometimes, or I'll just go in there. Those would be I guess I'm lucky. Like I just finished a PDF about weed and THC. So it's all about THC, CBD, even the non-psychoactive CBN, CBG, THC, things that have higher contents of THCV, you know, Afro strain, sativas, like it goes pretty deep, and then it gives recommendations. A lot more people are starting to smoke as an alternative to drinking and things like that. But I had a blast putting that together. Like it was fun for me to do the research, find the citations and do all that stuff. So I like that stuff. I like going to grocery stores and shooting the videos about like what's healthy and what's not. I have fun like editing those little videos and putting up the things that are good finds. Because not only is it something I enjoy doing, I guess, I never really thought about it. But I know it's helping, you know, it's going to help somebody. So and it's fun. I just like research. I like researching a lot of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So based off that project you just put together, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on stuff like Hoppe? What's the other one?
Oh.
Where you go down to Mexico?
What is it called? Just like the plant medicines.
Ayahuasca?
Yeah. Yeah,
like that, where you trip on things like that. So it really depends. They're very individualized. They have different experiences. And that one is very much, I would say, individualized to what your life circumstances are. Why you're doing it is a big one. I think a lot of people do it. They're looking for something. They don't really know what, hoping they're going to find it. If that's for you, I've had – you know, every end of the spectrum of replies about the experience. I've had some people have terrible experience. I will say it's more positive than negative.
Okay.
Seems like it opens people up to new things. But some people probably get mad who have done it. I notice with a lot of people, it's short lived. They come back and they're like, you know how it is when like someone cheats death, right? And like something happens, some crazy, they walk away from a crazy car accident and they're walking around like everything, the trees are greener and everything is, but then like 6 months later, like bills and like their wife is now is like everything sets back in.
Yeah.
So if you want to do it, if you're looking for something, if you're in, I feel like for people who are in kind of a transitional place in their life, go ahead and try it. Just, I would definitely do it from a personal referral source. I don't know anything about any of the, what the true effects are. And I don't think anyone does, right? It's kind of like, it's kind of like buying drugs on the street.
Yeah.
Like you can go to the, I mean, Matthew Perry just OD'd.
Yeah.
Like you'd think he would be somebody who would have measures in place and people mm-hmm. in place who would stop that, right? So yeah. It's like, if you want to try it, just be safe with it. And if things are going good, I would say don't mess with it, right? Yeah. I've known people who have done it, and they were in a good relationship, and them and their partner went and did it, and it caused things that I'm like, "What, dude? Why'd you?" And they, "Why? I wish I never done this. That was the start of it." And I'm like, things were good. It was, you know, so I don't know. It's one, I've never done it, but that's what I've heard from people. Have you ever done it? No.
Yeah. I've done Hoppy.
I don't, what is it?
Hoppy.
And what does that do exactly?
It, how do I explain it? They do, so they blow it up your nose and it's like, there's a masculine side, a feminine side. And then they did like some breath work and meditation stuff with it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it just burnt my nose. I didn't really.
Did you trip or anything like that? Yeah.
Now, so some of the guys in the room I was with doing it, they did.
Oh, interesting.
And they had experiences and everything. I mean, he had a pretty deep experience.
Mine wasn't too deep. Mine, I didn't know how to accept it.
Oh.
So I was just very emotional, but it was like, I was emotional, but I didn't know why. Like, I was conscious. Oh, it was weird.
You're like crying, you don't
yeah,
know why.
Exactly.
Really?
And I was like, what is going
like,
on?
What's wrong
with me?
I don't know.
Yeah, no, that was literally me. And,
that's
but there was guys that like loved it, had
what
great experiences.
Where did you guys do it?
So, Moab, Utah.
Okay. Sounds about right.
Yeah. It was definitely a different experience for
okay.
me. Like, I didn't get much out of it except.
Okay.
Headache and
I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think if I've ever done anything that I don't know. I don't like being out of control too much. I decided to go sober this year.
Okay.
That was a decision for me. Thank you. I appreciate that. That was a really good decision. I'll be honest. I should have done it a long time ago. I didn't really think it was something that was like hindering me in a big way. You don't realize it though until you cut it out and you kind of get out of the fog.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild. So I don't know. Ever since I did that, I noticed that I'm much less wanting to like I'm more trying to make my everyday life something that gives me that same gratification. You
okay.
know what I mean? Which I probably everyone should have been doing a long ago. I think sometimes people kind of get lost along. Some one or two bad things happen. We start to lean on something and we don't realize that we never really stop. You know
yeah.
what I mean? And food. Food's a big one for a lot of people. It's not mm-hmm. necessarily alcohol or drugs or sex or anything. I think food is that. And I was just telling somebody, food's one of the hardest to quit. I was able to put all the bottles out of the house. I was
yeah.
able to throw the wine away, throw all the bottles out, right? We don't buy it when we go to the grocery store. You can delete your dealer's number. You can tell them not to supply you.
Yeah.
Can't do it with food.
No.
You got to eat. Your family
yeah.
has to eat.
Yeah.
And your kids probably want to eat stuff that's not the healthiest things in the world, right?
Yeah.
So it's a tough one for people, for
yeah.
sure. And I think a lot of people go to it for that.
Yeah, that's my struggle. I love going home to visit my parents. But when I go there, they have the regular sodas in the pantry,
right.
ice cream. My sister loves to bake, so there's all types of cookies in the freezer.
And it's that familial feeling.
And when you're sitting there watching TV.
Right, and honestly,
like,
you don't want to have to completely give that up forever. That probably somewhat is your childhood. That
yeah.
probably right? And that's a big part of it, too, why I'm like, dude, you know, you're carnivore. What are you going to do when you go home for Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
You're gonna carnivore it up, buddy?
Yeah.
You're going to, no, sorry, Mom, no turkey, just eggs for me. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, like, sorry, no stuff. Like, how long are you going to do that? Super Bowl rolls around. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Some guy offers you a bowl of chips. Sorry, I'm a carnivore. Like, for how long are you really going to do that
yeah.
with your life? I tell people all the time, food is not sustenance. Food has so many other meanings. You know that. You go back home. Food is familial. It's cultural. It's emotional for a lot of people. It brings up it's so much deeper than just MREs for a soldier overseas or something. And
yeah.
and people need to realize that. I feel like this new hardcore movement of like, suck it up. You want high testosterone? Like, it's like, well, do you want to die not having lived your life at all? Like,
yeah.
you know what I mean? So you got to find that balance. So.
Okay. For you, I'm curious, what is one thing when clients go on this journey with you or people that have met you or seen you on social media, what is the one thing you want people to remember you for?
That's a good question. Let's see. The one thing to be remembered for. I try my best to really personalize everything. I really take each person as, I guess, as an individual. There is nothing cookie cutter. So there's nothing that gets sent out to the same person. There are some clients who I've done some, they'll tell you, some pretty deep dives on. I really take it personally when somebody hires me. I really take it like it's a sense of respect for me. So I try to make sure that whatever they're getting is truly designed for them. So I try to really stress communication. That's probably the biggest thing. One thing you hear with coaches a lot is, you know, the communication is poor. And having that from the beginning, understanding when do you need help? When do you need this? The clients who we get that set up early, it's a breeze. And if there's anything to focus on, if you're a client, whether you're looking at me or somebody else, communicate. Ask questions. That's what you're paying for. Every single one of those transformations you see on my page were the people who stayed in communication. The only thing that ever happens is when you mess up a little bit, you're going to mess up.
Yeah.
That's okay. Reach out. Nobody's here to judge you.
Yeah.
Like that's it. I think people get so scared. I wish more people who hire coaches would take that approach.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, one of the biggest things that has helped me see my results is I have to send progress pictures to my trainer every week.
Every week. I do. I have a coach too. Yeah.
So when he puts them side by side, you're like, oh.
He puts, oh shit, I did. I did change. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I did actually. I just had that happen with a girl this week. Her weight had barely moved, and she sent me over photos and put them side by side. Instantly changed her whole attitude.
Yeah.
Her whole mentality. If she didn't have those photos, her whole day was she felt terrible. She's like, I thought I'd be down by today. And I go, yeah, but look at the photos. And it was kind of like, oh, holy crap. I thought I looked the same as I did last week.
Yeah.
Looked like she had lost 4 or 5 pounds, and she was like down 0.4 or something. It's just kind of how stuff shakes out, right?
Yeah.
So it's great. Whatever holds you accountable, whatever a consistent measure is, all of my clients, people don't necessarily agree with this, but I have people weigh every single day. And the reason I have people weigh every single day is if you only weigh once a week, you got to cross your fingers and hope that you didn't have too much salt last night or you didn't have whatever, or you're going to feel like you just wasted a week.
Yeah.
So it's good to have as many data points as possible. If you're going to take it on, you know, that's why when you ask, if you're going to take it on, measure things every day for 2 weeks. You'll be blown away at how much you learn about yourself, even if you don't do things right. Even if you keep getting canes and you keep getting whatever, you're going to be like, oh crap, that was this much, or you know, that was this much, and you'll learn some for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the best way if people are interested in connecting with you or reaching out? What's the best way to contact you?
Definitely Instagram is my main social media. I'm on TikTok, but definitely not as active, not as much content. It's at Matt Hoodie on Instagram. And then I own Transform Scottsdale. If you do happen to live in North Scottsdale, it's about a mile north of the 101 on Scottsdale Road.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it a public gym or is it just?
It's a private gym. So it's members. It's by appointment only.
Okay.
Yeah. Everything's by appointment. We've got right around nine trainers there right now.
Okay.
So we have people ranging from rehab, from former physical therapy studios, you know, to people who are former professional basketball players who are great for athletic training. And then I oversee most of the, you know, with the as a dietitian, most of the people who have more serious weight loss needs or strained relationships with food. So we handle a little bit of everything there.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you for joining me, brother.
Absolutely. No,
I appreciate you. Thank you for making time.
I appreciate you, brother. Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in to Man on the Mic. We appreciate you spending your time with us today. Remember, our podcast is available on all platforms, so you can listen anytime, anywhere. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated. New episodes drop every week. Until next time, keep the conversation going. And as always, stay true to yourself. Thanks for watching.